The reading tonight is in the Gospel of Matthew. Matthew and chapter 5, beginning at the first verse, and I'll read as far as verse 12. Hear God's word. And seeing the multitude, he went up into a mountain, and when he was set, his disciples came unto him, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so persecuted the prophets which were before you. Now, tonight we're going to start with one of the verses. But before we do so, I feel I'm taking on quite a task here. And my intention, God willing, is to go through the Sermon on the Mount, which it's a few chapters here. But normally people mean by the Sermon on the Mount just the Beatitudes. And they like them because they're quite poetic. And they sound very beautiful, I'm sure, as I read them now, they're pleasant to listen to and flow very easily. So it makes it very lovely. And I've often heard said, not for many years now, because there aren't many just religious people left, but there are some. But if you do discuss the gospel with them, they say, but you see, I am a Sermon on the Mount man. Or one I had when I was a minister, and I was taking a Bible class, why don't you have a change? I'm an Epistle of James man. And I said, all right. But I said, I don't know how many will survive if I go through James. It's really an amplification of the Sermon on the Mount. And not many people survive that. And quite true, I lost quite a number of people. It was too much for them. Now, I tell you why it is. It is a difference between a religious person, an evangelical religious person, a good evangelical religious person, and a spiritual person. That's the difference. A spiritual person is filled with love and mercy and kindness, forgives and forbears, you know, so that when sometimes it seems impossible to love, they will do so. Now then, the aim of the apostles as well was to make the church into a spiritual place. And and it makes sense if you are willing to accept that. Spurgeon put it like this. He said, the difference between an ordinary Christian and a spiritual man is greater in appearance than the ordinary Christian and the unbeliever. Now, of course, we know that the unbeliever is going to hell and there's a vast difference there. But he meant in behavior. Or you can have it like this. One star differeth from another in glory. So you see, we may know a great deal. We may know doctrines well. We may know our scriptures. We may be right in so many things. But it hasn't made us tender spiritually. Or feeling that we're answerable to God. Now then, that's why I think I may lose all of you by going through this. I hope not. Anyway, I shall do it as tenderly as I can. This Sermon on the Mount leaves no hiding place. It's a very lovely passage if you really want to look into it properly. The man in the world quite likes it because it is poetic, you know, and they hang on to that. But it is more than that. It's much more than that. There's a picture here. Let me read this to you. It is a composite picture, each line in it accentuating some distinct spiritual feature, and with a whole, we should honestly and carefully compare ourselves. Now, the thing is, are we willing? Are we willing to compare ourselves with a picture that comes from these Beatitudes that we have here? Now, that's really the challenge. It is a mountain of grace, and it can only be surmounted by the help of God. Now then, we'll start there. It clashes violently with the philosophy of the world. It clashes violently with just kind of ordinary, well, I'm doing my share, I believe the right things. It clashes violently with that, and it is very searching, I admit that. But so worthwhile. Now, let's look. The deception of some ideas of what it means. There are many explanations regarding this first verse we're looking at. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Now, I'll ask you and myself, are we willing to admit that we are poor in spirit? I think now, are you willing to admit, I am poor in spirit? And you might say, well, are you asking me to bite the dust? Yes. You know, yes, I am. That's it, you see. So we begin there. And this particular beatitude is fundamental to them all. And it's very searching, I admit. Now then, poor in spirit. Now, here are the false ideas of poor in spirit means. Some say, oh, well, what it really means is just being poor. Just being poor. And but there is no virtue in being rich or poor in and of themselves. We may learn lessons by being rich and being generous, and we may be lessons by being poor and depend upon help. But neither of those really are spiritual things. Now, spiritual things. What is poor? That's one explanation. Is, oh, so long as you see that you are poor. But not everybody is poor. So it leaves a big part of the population out. Then other explanation is this one. It is a person who's willing to be self-effacing. And some people are naturally self-effacing. They're apologizing for themselves all the time. You've met them, haven't you? But not everybody is self-effacing. So it can't mean that. Another one is, it's our duty to suppress our personality. But we are not meant to suppress our personality. God has given us a personality. You know, the kind of awful example is the one by Dickens, by Uriah Heep, who kept telling people all the time, I'm humble, ever so humble, you know. And he wasn't all that humble after all, you know. So that it can be very artificial. It is not that. And there are many other examples of people's idea of what it means. Now then, what is it? It's not anything that's natural to us. Neither can it be nurtured by us. So what is poor in spirit? Second little point then tells us is the description of the poor in spirit. Why is this in the forefront? Why is it the first beatitude? You know, why is it the first one? Well, poverty of spirit is the very basis and foundation of all the other graces that are to follow. It's the very foundation of that. Now, you wouldn't have thought that would have been the one that would have been poor in spirit, but it is. Now, it is described as the jewel which Christians must wear. It is God's method to make him poor to fill him with grace. You begin to follow now? It's God's method of making us poor in order to fill us with grace. The trouble is we fill ourselves with pride or with grumbles or prejudice or whatever you like. It's a big list there if you like, in order to fill us with grace. Now, why is this important? If we do not accept this, we will never understand justification by faith. We may understand it theoretically, but we will never understand its spiritual meaning. We will be incapable of receiving the grace of God in the gospel unless we have learnt how to be poor in spirit. Until we are poor in spirit. That is, it's as if we had a hand, a handful of pebbles. They could be our pride, our prejudice, our kind of grumpiness, our difficulty wanting our own way, all those things, a whole handful of pebbles. Whilst you're holding on to those, he cannot fill our hand with gold nuggets, all right? So we've got to let go of anything that will hold us back from going on with God. Now, that is a very, very difficult one. I'm not saying that it is easy. Now, until we are poor in spirit, we shall never, ever see heaven. So it is important. And that's why it is the first one here. It means a complete absence of pride. Now then, when I say you, I'm meaning myself as well. Are you proud? Am I proud? Are there little areas of pride? Pride is easily offended. Pride pouts. Pride wants its own way. Pride is arrogance. In fact, God disliked it. In the Epistle of James, it said, God resisteth the proud. He'll fight against them. That's terrible, isn't it? God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace to the humble. So we're in an area now which is the beginning of understanding what true spirituality is. It is the absence of pride. It's the absence of self-assurance when people say, well, I can do it. And they're being arrogant in one or another, or I know it. I need to give examples, there are thousands of them, aren't there? The kind of pride of self-reliance. I don't need anybody. I don't need help. Now, it is an awareness of our utter worthlessness. All right? Now, that's got a long way. Are you willing to say, well, I'm worthless? It's an awareness of that. A true Christian does not rely on his natural birth or his boasting or rely on money or wealth or natural abilities, or his own morality. We must understand, in the eyes of God, we are nothing. My, what are we? When you think of only one description of God, the immensity of God. I mean, there's a vast creation beyond any words that I can find to describe it. It's a vast creation. I mean, if you want size, well, where does it end? Where does it begin? In any direction, you know, and say with time. And God is greater than his creation. So we are little specks, really. You know, we're insignificant little specks. And yet we're told that God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. Isaiah had a very profound experience. You remember it. He had a vision of the presence of God and the cherubic figures singing holy, 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 and so on. And he said about himself, and he was a good man, woe is me, for I am a man of unclean lips. Well, you might say, well, this is an amazing thing. This poor self of ours must grow less and less. Nothing in my hands I bring, simply to thy cross I cling. Now, have you got there? Have you got there? You may be able to give the gospel, the active obedience and the passive obedience of Jesus Christ, able to describe heaven and hell and the way of salvation and the characters, the attributes of God. But you see, I'm asking you really, have you thought of yourself in the sight of a holy God? And even if there was only a little draft as he passes by a trillion, trillion miles away, a little draft, you know, you say, woe is me, for I am unclean. You see, compared to the cleanness of God. You must then have a good vision of God for this. He that is poor in spirit is weaned from himself. That's what God does. He weans us from ourselves. In Psalm 131, verse 2, my soul is even as a weaned child. We have to quit self. That's it, really, to put it simply. We have to quit self with its pride, with its arrogance and its self-importance, and the whole list of things. Such a big list. He begins to admire Christ. He begins to have high thoughts about him. He sees what it means to die without Christ, that there can be nothing worse than dying without Christ, that his riches are not in himself, but that his riches are in Christ. Christ is his wisdom, righteousness, sanctification, redemption. He must come there. His chief complaint must be himself. In that hymn it says, just and holy is thy name. I am all unrighteousness. Vile and full of sin I am. Thou art full of truth and grace. Now, if you notice, in most hymn books, that stanza is left out. You know the hymn, Jesus, Lover of My Soul? It's left out because people find it offensive. Listen to it again. Just and holy is thy name. I am all unrighteousness. Vile and full of sin I am. Thou art full of truth and grace. What do we say? For the modern churchgoer, that is really offensive and not appropriate. It is appropriate. And the fact that they find it offensive shows it's doing something. Lowly in heart, the more grace we have, the more humble we will be. We acknowledge the strength of Christ. The amazing thing, you see, if you acknowledge the strength of Christ, you're able to say, actually, I can do all things through Christ who strengthened me. But first of all, you will see, it's no contribution of your own. We take Christ on his terms. In other words, put it very, very simply, we capitulate completely to Christ. Now, do you find that going very far? What do you like? What do you like? Look at your faults now, and I look at mine. I've got plenty, right? So I'll not list them. Look at yourself. Would you like to change? Do you want to change? That's a good sign. It's a complete capitulation to Christ. So what does he say about these people? He said, well, this is what I say. They're blessed. They're blessed. What did you say, Matthew? Well, this is what I'm saying. I'm quoting Jesus Christ's sermon. He said, blessed are the poor in spirit. They see their poverty. They see their spiritual poverty. They see their total inadequacy. They see that they could never get to heaven in their own strength. They see they could not. And however, some people are gifted, some people are not. What does it matter? You know, if you measure with the measurements of eternity, it's only a matter of a grain, isn't it? It doesn't make any difference, really. What are we in the sight of God? And I say, well, nothing, Father. Nothing. Vile and full of sin, I am. Thou art full of truth and grace. And he says, if you have come to that place, you're blessed. You're blessed. So you don't come to Christ like this. Well, I believe the doctrines. Very good. I agree with them all. And I will stand by them. I will perhaps even die for them. I'm not sure, but I might. And I would proclaim them. And I'd argue for them. I am a Christian. Well, maybe he could be, but not very spiritual. They may just scrape in. I don't know. I don't know. Now then, he says, if you come to that place where you see, blessed are the poor in spirit, that within me there's by now no pride. No pride or no room for pride. I don't want God resisting me. I don't want God to fight against me, then it comforts me. He giveth grace to the humble. And humility, and this is very close to what we're talking about. Then this, the destination of such people. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Well, what a reward. You know, what a tremendous reward. When you think of it. It's a hard place to come to, I agree. And if anybody is kind of hurt in their hearts like this, well, it's not me that's hurting you, it's our Lord Jesus Christ, all right? And he's not hurting you in order to hurt you. He's hurting you in order to heal you. You see the difference? And he does it beautifully. So that's why it's basic. Until you come to that place, I have no room for the pride of self. You know, before long we'll be singing a hymn, and it's worth my quoting it now, because it really does put it well, that there's no room for any kind of arrogance, pride, difficult, prejudice, or all the rest of it. If you want to be a spiritual person, I agree you can be evangelical and you may be saved. I agree that. But I don't know, and I cannot be absolutely sure about it. I don't know. There's no need to be a spiritual person. Listen to this hymn. Oh, the bitter shame and sorrow that a time could ever be when I let the Saviour's pity plead in vain and proudly answered, all of self and none of thee. Now I've believed, I'll get on with it. Yet he found me. I beheld him bleeding on the accursed tree, heard him pray, forgive them, Father. And my wistful heart said faintly, well, some of self and some of thee. Day by day, his tender mercy, healing, helping, full and free, sweet and strong and ah, so patient, brought me lower, lower. While I whispered, less of self and more of thee. That's a good bargain, Lord. Less of self and more of thee. Then listen to this. Higher than the highest heavens, deeper than the deepest sea, Lord, thy love at last hath conquered. Grant me now my supplication, none of self and all of thee. Is that remarkable? None of self and all of thee. That's what it means to be poor in spirit. Blessed, destination of such people. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Well, you don't want to miss out on that, do you? So can you see this is fundamental to the whole Sermon on the Mount? Take this away and you've taken the foundation stone away. You have to get as far as that. So I wouldn't say I capitulate to Christ. My character, my attitude. If you have a difficult nature, I capitulate that. If you have a show-off, all sorts of things. I don't want to go through them because then you may just get at one person more than another and it's silly. We all must come to that place. I capitulate completely and admit my unworthiness. Then you say, well, I bless you. What would the blessing be, Lord? The kingdom of heaven. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. So you begin there with the most humiliating, in a way, if you're proud, and the most blessed place to be, that you, I am worthless, vile and full of sin I am. And yet he lifts you to the heights of glory. Now, isn't it amazing? In the same verse, he brings you right down to show you your size. And the same verse, he lifts you to the greatest of rewards. It is a very remarkable thing. Heaven, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Here we are then. What they receive. Now, I'll go through the things that you and I will get. Revelation 2:10. Be then faithful unto death, and I will give thee a crown of life. Like that? Nice. A crown of life. Now, it's an honorable crown, more honorable than the crowns of kings. It is a crown of glory. And one saint will not envy another because each will have an equally valuable crown. So they won't be saying, my crown's bigger than yours. My crown is more pure gold than yours. My crown is Welsh gold, or something like that. It's a crown of glory. Then, in chapter 7, verse 9, he gives us something to wear. Clothed in white robes. If you look at the verse fully, and not read it all, but it says, clothed in white robes. This is the imputed righteousness of Christ. When we were washed and when we were forgiven our sin, and Christ paid the penalty on Calvary, I mean, that's the most humbling thing you can think of for us as we behold that. Did he do that for me? Is that really burning in my heart of gratitude? Then as well as that, he said, look, I've made you clean of all your sin, past, present, future. I want you to wear something very beautiful. I want you to wear my son's life. Well, can there be anything more wonderful, more beautiful than the life of Jesus Christ? Do you want to be like him? There's a wonderful book, I think it's Thomas A. Kempis. Well, have I got the right author? Imitation of Christ. You know, to be like him, Christ-like. Are you Christ-like? Do you want to be Christ-like? How wonderful, how a church full of Christ-like people. Here it says, you know, that we clothe in white robes. The white robes represent the purity and the life of Christ. Then a scepter, an unusual one, is still in the same chapter. The saints in heaven have their scepters, palms in their hands, as emblems of victory and triumph. And then thrones, Revelation 3:21, to him that overcometh will I grant to sit with me in my throne. What a view, you know. You know, sometimes we want to get a good view of something. You go, well, I paid a lot for this seat. Yes, he did. He paid a lot for that seat, all right? His throne. To him that overcometh will I grant to sit with me in my throne, even as also I overcame and am set down with my Father on his throne. There is beyond our imagination. The kingdom of heaven excels all other kingdoms. I've got something different now. The founder and maker of heaven is God. He made heaven. Hebrews 11:10, about Abraham. And he looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. That's what he's looking for. What are you looking for, Abraham? I'm looking for a city. Where will you find it? Not here on earth. Its builder and maker is God. That's my home address. Or in 2 Corinthians 5, verse 1. Made without hands, for we know that if our earthly house of this tabernacle were dissolved, we have a building of God, and house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. What's he talking about there? Well, this little frail body, all right? And your little body. And even the strongest, there's not a great deal of difference between us, really, you know, when you really think of it in the vastness of all things. Well, when this, it becomes dissolved, when it dies, and just becomes maybe nothing, you know, when this earthly house is dissolved, I shall break my heart. No, we have a building of God, and house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Now then, it excels in riches beyond the telling. We shall be lost in wonder, love, and praise. Riches that are not just the ordinary riches that we would have today here on earth and what we count as riches. Riches that are indescribable. It excels in perfection. The tree of life is here. There's no sin in heaven. And there's no sorrow there. Now think now. Do you remember Peter's description? It says an inheritance. It says incorruptible, undefiled, that fadeth not away, reserved in heaven for you. It cannot be corrupted. It cannot be defiled. And it cannot fade. And in this world, what do we see from the top of society to the bottom? Defilement, corruption, and fading. That's true. But not there. Not there. There's no sin there. And there's no sorrow there. And we all will have our share of sorrow here. But there's no sorrow there. It excels in security. It cannot be shaken. It cannot be moved. Other kingdoms have come and gone. Empires have risen and fallen. And many we don't even know their names. You know, We only know the ones that have related to mainly in Europe and so on. But there have been many risen and fallen, and they are soon forgotten. Once they've fallen, a decade or two, and they are soon forgotten again. But this one cannot be moved, and nothing can destroy it. It is an everlasting kingdom. In Revelation 21, verse 3, "And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God, and God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow, nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away." Well, look at that list. "And God shall wipe away." I can't imagine exactly what that is, because God is a spirit, but he will remove. You see, we'll have come to the end of our lives, and say now, if we are Christian and we enter into glory, and we'll have our share. You know, we have our share. And they say, "Come here. You know, we don't have sorrow here. Let me wipe the tears of your heart. Let me wipe them away. Tears from their eyes. And there shall be no more death. You need not be afraid of the limitation of life. There'll be no more death. Neither sorrow." And we have our sorrows. "Nor crying." There'll be no tears here. There'll be nobody crying. "Neither shall there be any more pain." And what a great deal of pain there is in this world. And especially amongst those who are the Lord, you know, we suffer pain in so many ways, from outside sometimes and from within, as the case may be. "For the former things are passed away." They've gone forever. Now here we are. "Blessed are the poor in spirit." It's foundational. You have to lay aside all pride, all prejudice, all anger, all willful whatever, or all sorts of things that stop you being spiritual. You will be evangelical, very good, but not good enough. Spiritual. A spiritual person, and you begin to think spiritually. And when there's a decision to be made, you will think spiritually, you know, and you're willing to follow that way. And when you have this capitulation where you say to the Lord, "I lay that all aside and I throw myself on thee, O Lord," he said, "My child, blessed are you, for yours is the kingdom of heaven." Heaven belongs to you. Now, that's the first one. Not a very easy one, but it has, if you're willing, a beauty of its own. Little toddlers taking their first step. You know, when they take their first step, you always remember the first step of your eldest child, where it happened and where it was and the date and so on. The first step, that's your first step in the spiritual life. "Blessed are the poor in spirit." And then you reach the heavens, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. You know, he brings us down to bring us up. He removes our pride to fill us with his beauty.